His watch was nearly over when, far off where he guessed that the western archway stood, he fancied that he could see two pale points of light, almost like luminous eyes. He started. His head had nodded. "I must have nearly fallen asleep on guard," he thought. "I was on the edge of a dream." He stood up and rubbed his eyes and remained standing, peering into the dark until he was relieved by Legolas. When he lay down, he quickly went to sleep, but it seemed to him that the dream went on. He heard whispers and saw the two pale points of light approaching slowly. He woke and found that the others were speaking softly near him and that a dim light was falling on his face. High up above the eastern archway, through a shaft near the roof, came a long pale gleam. And across the hall, through the northern arch, light also glimmered faint and distantly. Frodo sat up.
"Good morning," said Gandalf. "For morning it is again at last. I was right, you see. We are high up on the east side of Moria. Before today is over, we ought to find the great gates and see the waters of Miramir lying in the Dimrill Dale before us."
"I shall be glad," said Gimli. "I've looked on Moria, and it's very great, but it has become dark and dreadful, and we have found no sign of my kindred. I doubt now that Balin ever came here."
After they had breakfasted, Gandalf decided to go on again at once.
"We're tired, but we shall rest better when we are outside," he said. "I think that none of us will wish to spend another night in Moria."
"No, indeed," said Boromir.
"Which way shall we take? Yonder eastward arch?"
"Maybe," said Gandalf. "But I don't know yet exactly where we are. Unless I'm quite astray, I guess that we're above and to the north of the great gates, and it may not be easy to find the right road down to them. The eastern arch will probably prove to be the way that we must take, but before we make up our minds, we ought to look about us. Let us go towards the light in the north door. If we could find a window, it would help, but I fear that the light comes only down deep shafts."
Following his lead, the company passed under the northern arch. They found themselves in a wide corridor. As they went along it, the glimmer grew stronger, and they saw that it came through a doorway on their right. It was high and flat-topped, and the stone door was still upon its hinges, standing half open. Beyond it was a large square chamber. It was dimly lit, but to their eyes, after so long a time in the dark, it seemed dazzlingly bright, and they blinked as they entered. Their feet disturbed a deep dust upon the floor and stumbled among things lying in the doorway, whose shapes they could not at first make out. The chamber was lit by a wide shaft high in the further eastern wall. It slanted upwards, and far above, a small square patch of blue sky could be seen. The light of the shaft fell directly on a table in the middle of the room, a single oblong block, about 2 feet high, upon which was laid a great slab of white stone.
"It looks like a tomb," muttered Frodo, and bent forwards with a curious sense of foreboding to look more closely at it.
Gandalf came quickly to his side. On the slab, runes were deeply graven.
"These are Daeron's runes, such as were used of old in Moria," said Gandalf. "Here is written in the tongues of men and dwarves, Balin, son of Fundin, lord of Moria."
"He is dead then," said Frodo. "I feared it was so." Gimli cast his hood over his face. Chapter 5. The Bridge of Khazad-dûm. The company of the Ring stood silent beside the tomb of Balin. Frodo thought of Bilbo and his long friendship with the dwarf, and of Balin's visit to the Shire long ago. In that dusty chamber in the mountains, it seemed 1,000 years ago, and on the other side of the world. At length they stirred and looked up, and began to search for anything that would give them tidings of Balin's fate, or show what had become of his folk. There was another smaller door on the other side of the chamber, under the shaft. By both the doors they could now see that many bones were lying, and among them were broken swords and axe heads, and cloven shields and helms. Some of the swords were crooked, orc scimitars with blackened blades. There were many recesses cut in the rock of the walls, and in them were large iron-bound chests of wood. All had been broken and plundered, but beside the shattered lid of one there lay the remains of a book. It had been slashed and stabbed and partly burned, and it was so stained with black and other dark marks like old blood that little of it could be read. Gandalf lifted it carefully, but the leaves crackled and broke as he laid it on the slab. He pored over it for some time without speaking. Frodo and Gimli, standing at his side, could see, as he gingerly turned the leaves, that they were written by many different hands, in runes, both of Moria and of Dale, and here and there in Elvish script. At last Gandalf looked up.
"It seems to be a record of the fortunes of Balin's folk," he said. "I guess that it began with their coming to Dimrill Dale nigh on 30 years ago. The pages seem to have numbers referring to the years after their arrival. The top page is marked 1, 3, so at least 2 are missing from the beginning. Listen to this. 'We drove out orcs from the great gate and guard,' I think. The next word is blurred and burned, probably room. 'We slew many in the bright, I think, sun in the dale. Floy was killed by an arrow. He slew the great.' Then there is a blur followed by 'Floy under grass near Mirror Mere.' The next line or two I cannot read. Then comes 'We have taken the 21st hall of North End to dwell in.' There is, I cannot read what, a shaft is mentioned. Then Balin has set up his seat in the chamber of Mazarbul."
"The Chamber of Records," said Gimli. "I guess that is where we now stand."
"Well, I can read no more for a long way," said Gandalf, "except the word gold and Durin's axe and something helm. Then Balin is now Lord of Moria. That seems to end a chapter. After some stars, another hand begins, and I can see 'We found true silver,' and later the word 'well forged,' and then something, I have it, Mithril,
and the last 2 lines, 'Owen to seek for the upper armories of Third Deep,' something, 'go westwards,' a blur, 'to Hollin Gate.'"
Gandalf paused and set a few leaves aside.
"There are several pages of the same sort, rather hastily written and much damaged," he said.
"But I can make little of them in this light. Now there must be a number of leaves missing, because they begin to be numbered 5, the 5th year of the colony, I suppose. Let me see. No, they're too cut and stained. I can't read them. We might do better in the sunlight. Wait, here's something. A large, bold hand, using an Elvish script."
"That would be Ori's hand," said Gimli, looking over the wizard's arm. "He could write well and speedily, and often use the Elvish characters."
"I fear he had ill tidings to record in a fair hand," said Gandalf. "The first clear word is sorrow, but the rest of the line is lost, unless it ends in estre. Yes, it must be yester, followed by day, being the 10th of November. Balin, Lord of Moria, fell in Dimrill Dale. He went alone to look in Mirror Mere. An orc shot him from behind a stone. We slew the orc, but many more, up from east, up the Silver Load. The remainder of the page is so blurred that I can hardly make anything out, but I think I can read, 'We have barred the gates,' and then 'can hold them long if,' and then perhaps 'horrible' and 'suffer.' Poor Balin,
He seems to have kept the title that he took for less than 5 years. I wonder what happened afterwards. But there's no time to puzzle out the last few pages. Here's the last page of all. He paused and sighed.
It is grim reading, he said. I fear their end was cruel. Listen. We cannot get out. We cannot get out. They have taken the bridge and second hall. Fra and Lone and Gnarly fell there. Then there are four lines smeared so that I can only read went 5 days ago. The last line runs, the pool is up to the wall at Westgate. The watcher in the water took Owen. We cannot get out. The end comes, and then drums. Drums in the deep. I wonder what that means. The last thing written is in a trailing scrawl of elf letters. They are coming. There is nothing more.
Gandalf paused and stood in silent thought.
A sudden dread and a horror of the chamber fell on the company.
We cannot get out, muttered Gimli.
It was well for us that the pool had sunk a little and that the watcher was sleeping down at the southern end.
Gandalf raised his head and looked round. They seem to have made a last stand by both doors, he said, but there were not many left by that time. So ended the attempt to retake Moria. It was valiant but foolish. The time has not yet come. Now, I fear, we must say farewell to Balin, son of Fundin. He must lie in the halls of his fathers. We will take this book, the Book of Mazabal, and look at it more closely later. You had better keep it, Gimli, and take it back to Dayan, if you get a chance. It will interest him, though it will grieve him deeply. Come, let us go. The morning is passing.
Which way shall we go? Asked Boromir.
Back to the hall, answered Gandalf. But our visit to this room has not been in vain. I now know where we are. This must be, as Gimli says, the chamber of Mazabal, and the hall must be the 21st of the North End. Therefore we should leave by the eastern arch of the hall, and bear right and south, and go downwards. The 21st hall should be on the 7th level, that is 6 above the level of the gates. Come now, back to the hall. Gandalf had hardly spoken these words when there came a great noise, a rolling boom that seemed to come from depths far below and to tremble in the stone at their feet. They sprang towards the door in alarm. Doom, doom, it rolled again, as if huge hands were turning the very caverns of Moria into a vast drum. Then there came an echoing blast. A great horn was blown in the hall, and answering horns and harsh cries were heard further off. There was a hurrying sound of many feet.
They are coming, cried Legolas.
We cannot get out, said Gimli. Trapped, cried Gandalf. Why did I delay? Here we are caught, just as they were before. But I was not here then. We will see what. Doom, doom, came the drum beat, and the wall shook.
Slam the doors and wedge them, shouted Aragorn, and keep your packs on as long as you can. We may get a chance to cut our way out yet.
No, said Gandalf. We must not get shut in. Keep the east door ajar. We will go that way if we get a chance.
Another harsh horn call and shrill cries rang out. Feet were coming down the corridor. There was a ring and clatter as the company drew their swords. Glamdring shone with a pale light, and Sting glinted at the edges. Boromir set his shoulder against the western door.
Wait a moment. Do not close it yet, said Gandalf.
He sprang forward to Boromir's side and drew himself up to his full height.
Who comes hither to disturb the rest of Balin, Lord of Moria? He cried in a loud voice.
There was a rush of hoarse laughter, like the fall of sliding stones into a pit. Amid the clamor, a deep voice was raised in command.
Doom, boom, doom, went the drums in the deep.
With a quick movement, Gandalf stepped before the narrow opening of the door and thrust forward his staff. There was a dazzling flash that lit the chamber and the passage outside. For an instant, the wizard looked out. Arrows whined and whistled down the corridor as he sprang back.
"There are many orcs, very many of them," he said, "and some are large and evil, black Uruks of Mordor. For the moment they are hanging back, but there is something else there, a great cave troll, I think, or more than one. There's no way of escape that way."
"And no hope at all if they come at the other door as well," said Boromir.
"There's no sound outside here yet," said Aragorn, who was standing by the eastern door listening. "The passage on this side plunges straight down a stair. It plainly does not lead back towards the hall. But it's no good flying blindly this way with the pursuit just behind. We can't block the door. Its key is gone and the lock is broken, and it opens inwards. We must do something to delay the enemy first." "We will make them fear the chamber of Mazabul," he said grimly, feeling the edge of his sword, Unduril.
Heavy feet were heard in the corridor. Boromir flung himself against the door and heaved it to. Then he wedged it with broken sword blades and splinters of wood. The company retreated to the other side of the chamber, but they had no chance to fly yet. There was a blow on the door that made it quiver, and then it began to grind slowly open, driving back the wedges. A huge arm and shoulder, with a dark skin of greenish scales, was thrust through the opening gap. Then a great, flat, toeless foot was forced through below. There was a dead silence outside. Boromir leaped forward and hewed at the arm with all his might, but his sword rang, glanced aside, and fell from his shaken hand. The blade was notched. Suddenly, and to his own surprise, Frodo felt a hot wrath blaze up in his heart. "The Shire!" he cried, and springing beside Boromir, he stooped and stabbed with Sting at the hedge's foot. There was a bellow, and the foot jerked back, nearly wrenching Sting from Frodo's arms. Black drops dripped from the blade and smoked on the floor. Boromir hurled himself against the door and slammed it again.
"One for the Shire!" cried Aragorn. "The hobbit's bite is deep. You have a good blade, Frodo, son of Drogo."
There was a crash on the door, followed by crash after crash. Rams and hammers were beating against it. It cracked and staggered back, and the opening grew suddenly wide. Arrows came whistling in, but struck the northern wall and fell harmlessly to the floor. There was a horn blast and a rush of feet, and orcs, one after another, leapt into the chamber. How many there were, the company could not count. The affray was sharp, but the orcs were dismayed by the fierceness of the defence. Legolas shot two through the throat. Gimli hewed the legs from under another that had sprung up on Balin's tomb. Boromir and Aragorn slew many. When 13 had fallen, the rest fled shrieking, leaving the defenders unharmed, except for Sam, who had a scratch along the scalp. A quick duck had saved him, and he had felled his orc, a sturdy thrust with his barrow blade. A fire was smouldering in his brown eyes that would have made Ted Sandyman step backwards if he'd seen it.
"Now is the time," cried Gandalf. "Let us go before the troll returns."
But even as they retreated, and before Pippin and Merry had reached the stair outside, a huge orc chieftain, almost man-high, clad in black mail from head to foot, leapt into the chamber. Behind him his followers clustered in the doorway. His broad, flat face was swart. His eyes were like coals, and his tongue was red. He wielded a great spear. With a thrust of his huge hide shield, he turned Boromir's sword and bore him backwards, throwing him to the ground. Diving under Aragorn's blow with the speed of a striking snake, he charged into the company and thrust with his spear straight at Frodo. The blow caught him on the right side, and Frodo was hurled against the wall and pinned. Sam, with a cry, hacked at the spear shaft, and it broke. And even as the orc flung down the truncheon and swept out his scimitar, Undoril came down upon his helm. There was a flash like flame, and the helm burst asunder. The orc fell with cloven head. His followers fled howling as Boromir and Aragorn sprang at them.
Doom!
doom with the drums in the deep. The great voice rolled out again. Now, shouted Gandalf, now is the last chance. Run for it.
Aragorn picked up Frodo where he lay by the wall and made for the stair, pushing Merry and Pippin in front of him. The others followed, but Gimli had to be dragged away by Legolas. In spite of the peril, he lingered by Balin's tomb with his head bowed. Boromir hauled the eastern door.